Hello. Hi. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for staying with us. I'm Shirley Chan, Pix11 reporter, and also an Asian American native New Yorker. New York City is my hometown. I'm proud of it. I'm very honored to be moderating tonight's forum. So we are now going to start our next panel of candidates. So let me introduce Art Chang, Ray McGuire, Diane Morales, Maya Wiley. Comptroller Scott Stringer was to join us, but we just let us know that he will not be able to make it tonight, unfortunately. So we will have our four candidates for this next panel. Let me also want to remind everyone who's viewing, that there is also live interpretation in Bengali, Cantonese, Korean, Mandarin, right now. So please remember, those who are doing the live interpretation, that is going on for our candidates. Remember to speak slowly, loudly, and clearly for our interpreters. So we'll have a list of questions here from the Coalition for Asian American Children and Families, who has organized this alongside the 30 some odd, three dozen rather, some odd community-based organizations. So we are going to get started here. We're gonna first have each one of you tell us a little bit about what values you believe will guide your decision-making as mayor. Let's start with Diane Morales. Ms. Morales?
Great, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. It's such a pleasure to be here with all of you. Thank you for having me. My campaign and my administration are all rooted in the same things, the principles of equity and justice, through the lens and the framework of my platform, which is based on dignity, care, and solidarity. I believe that the pandemic has exposed and exacerbated longstanding inequities that have existed for far too long in our city, and we haven't done enough to address that. And I am committed to actually building a city that is better than it has ever been and that allows us all to live in dignity.
All right, Ms. Morales, thank you so much. And now let's go to Mr. Chang. If you can weigh in, what values will guide your decision-making as mayor of New York?
Well, I think the values that really matter come from one's life experience. I'm a child of Asian immigrants, and I became an adult here in New York City. And so as a result, equality is super important to me. Women's rights are super important to me. Gender equality are super important. So I was born in Jim Crow Atlanta. I grew up in an all-white school district in Akron, Ohio. I faced racism on the street, and I also experienced domestic violence in my own household. I became the second man as a result to graduate with a women's studies degree from Yale. I moved to New York in 1985 with $400 in my pocket. And I really struggled to pay the rent, to put food on the table. And so these things kind of come forward. I found opportunities to solve problems using technology and government and business. So I believe that this translates into the fact that everyone deserves a roof over their head, food on the table, safety, a great education, and an opportunity to grow and prosper.
Thank you so much. Let's now go to Mr. McGuire. Mr. McGuire?
Hi, thank you. The values that I will use to lead this city are the values on which I grew up, raised by a single mother who sometimes had to work three jobs, eventually turned into a social worker, and my grandparents who raised me and my two brothers, and at any point in time, half a dozen foster children. And the values that got me to where I am today are values of faith, values of integrity, and that is respect of faith, integrity, unyielding integrity, which is your word is your bond and you don't change. Your truth is your truth. You don't have to remember tomorrow what you said today. It is making certain that we treat each other as equals and with dignity, that we value education, which is that which got me here, and that we make certain that we have the highest standards of excellence, excellence in education, so that we have the opportunity to go and be involved and participate and eventually leave in a world that has economic equality based on the kind of education that we've been given and the opportunities that we've been given as a result thereof. Those are the values I will lead this city by.
Thank you, Mr. McGuire. Now, finally, to Ms. Wiley, what values will guide your decision-making as mayor of the city of New York?
Well, thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here. And look, I'm a mother. I have two daughters born and raised here, 20 and 17. But I'm also the daughter of civil rights activists who became a civil rights lawyer and advocate. And for me, it is a New York City that remains diverse, but one that is stronger and more fair and more just, because it's not just about recovering from COVID, because there was far too much that was broken before COVID that it laid bare, deepened, and fast-tracked. So fundamentally, it's about making sure we fix what was broken, like our affordability crisis. We fix what has become broken in our divisions and our hatred, and hate can't have a home here, and that we do it in a way that ensures that we grow, but we grow without displacement, so that we all have a place with dignity here in New York City, as do our children.
Okay, thank you so much. Our next question will also be a 1-minute response for each candidate. And this is a very important topic. It's not only headline making, it is important to not only the city, but to the fabric of this nation. And I'm talking about the rise in hate incidents against Asian Americans. How would you as mayor address these incidents and provide support to our Asian American neighborhoods and communities during this time? I'll start with Mr. Chang.
Well, I'll just say, as an Asian, this is the first time in the 35 years that I've been in New York City where I felt afraid and I felt fearful for my kids. And I've gone out on the street and in the subways looking actively out to take care and help protect my fellow Asians. We have to actually have knowledge. We have to spread the word about this hate. And then we have to figure out how we take action. So many of the most violent hate crimes that have been perpetrated by folks with mental illness. So we need a substantial mental illness response. I'm proposing 10,000 beds of mental illness for mentally ill homeless. The second thing we need to do is community action, like violence interrupter training. And then the third is increased understanding through education about Asian history and about all the people who make up this diverse and great city. And then finally, we need to have appropriate punishment for perpetrators, but police are not a long-term solution.
Okay, thank you so much. And Ms. Wiley, to you now, please weigh in on how you would address the hate crimes against Asian Americans in our city.
Well, as I said, it does start with having a mayor who will be loud and clear that hate doesn't have a home here in New York City for anyone, especially for Asian and Pacific Islander residents. And just as Art said, it has to start with partnerships with community-based organizations in the AAPI community, because the reality is we have disinvested in support for community-based organizations in the community. That's important because we need to also be bridge building and creating more relationships across communities. And that's what community-based organizations do. So I'll make sure more resources are getting to those organizations. But it's also increasing the power and the capacity of our Office of Human Rights, because that commission is actually one that has a public education function, as well as the ability to work to bridge some of these divides. And I absolutely agree, and in my education platform is culturally responsive education. We have to learn more about one another, and we also have to have more desegregated schools integrated, so we're also learning with one another. That's critically important to me.
Okay, and now to Ms. Morales. How would you as mayor address these hate incidents?
Sure. You know, I think there has obviously been a dramatic increase in incidents of violence in our communities. I don't think, however, that we can decouple that from the dramatic increase in the insecurity of New Yorkers. Over the last year, our government has failed to provide housing insecurity. They have failed to provide food security. They have failed to provide universal healthcare to our city in the midst of a global pandemic. This has dramatically increased people's insecurities, their fears, their frustrations, their anxieties, and that is definitely manifesting in a variety of different ways. We need to actually invest in ensuring that people have access to the services and supports that they need in order to live in dignity, we need to make sure that we're strengthening all of our communities so that people can live safely and in prosperity. That also means we have to reimagine public safety. We have to stop equating policing with safety, because we know actually that police don't prevent crime, they respond to crime. We also know that even then, they're only effective at 4% of actually solving crime. So we need to actually institute a community first responders department that would provide trained and skilled people who can provide intervention and de-escalation in instances of homelessness, of mental health, of substance abuse. And we need to connect those people in crisis to the larger ecosystem of human service providers, medical providers, mental health providers, so that they are getting the help that they need so we can break this cycle. That is the way for us to move forward in solidarity and taking care of each other as neighbors in New York City.
Ms. Morales, I'm a lifelong New Yorker and I have an Asian American. I have to say my brother and I had a conversation recently about having our mother and the fears of having our mother go out by herself. Yeah. How would you, specifically when it comes to the Asian American community, how would you assuage their fears about simple thing like going down the street to buy groceries?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fears are warranted. There has been a demonstrable increase. But I also don't believe that the criminalization, that the way for us to deal with this is through policing, because I don't think that police have actually, you know, we haven't reduced the number of police on our streets over the last year. In fact, we've increased that their presence in the subway, and that has not correlated to an increase in violence. So we have to rely on other community strengths and other community partners to keep each other safe during this critical time. And we also need to plan for a future where we're not relying on a resource that has already failed us so tremendously.
Okay, thank you so much. And now let me send it on over to Mr. McGuire. How would you as mayor address the hate incidents in the Asian American
community? I'm heavily influenced by the words of the great Martin Luther King Jr., who says that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We're tied in an inescapable garment of destiny. What affects one of us affects all of us. The first thing I would do as mayor is to stand up and denounce the anti-Asian hatred that we're now seeing today. We need to have a leader who says this is not that for which we stand. Number one. Number two, I would invest in the anti-Asian or the anti-hate crimes unit. I want better policing. I'd invest in the hate crimes unit. And as you says, when our mothers go out into the streets in fear for their physical safety, one of the things that gives them comfort is the fact that they see people there who do have the authority of the police, who give them comfort that it's going to be okay. So I would make sure that I had better policing, and those who are there to protect, at least give them comfort of protection. I also invest in the community-based organizations that can serve as those who can give the mental health support that's necessary in order for those who suffer from the hate to get the resources that they need. So yes, in order to protect our mothers and give them confidence, we need to have a visible show of that which stands for right.
Okay, thank you, candidates. Let's move on to our next question. We're gonna dive a little deeper into this topic. What role will you play as mayor in terms of building solidarity between Asian American communities and other marginalized groups to dismantle systemic racism? You'll have a minute each to respond. We'll start with Mr. McGuire. Mr. McGuire?
You know, I have a lifelong, at least a career long, if not a lifelong experience with bringing different communities together. As a 6'4", 200-pound Black man, having to navigate a world where the vast majority of people did not look like me, and having run a global business where I have existed and led in communities around the world, including in specific in the Asian communities around the world, I know how it is to bring people from different backgrounds and different demographics, from different economic backgrounds together, because I've had to do that in order to lead a business, especially in the depth of the crisis. And not only have I led businesses, I've led organizations that are diverse, multicultural organizations whose focus was to make certain that they were inclusive, that every member of the community was included. And I've also made certain that those leaders who were on my team reflected the rich mosaic of this city, including the Asian community. So I have a track record of having been inclusive in bringing communities together.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Wiley, I'll have you weigh in now.
Well, thank you. You know, I have spent my entire adult life fighting to end structural racism. In fact, when I created my not-for-profit organization called the Center for Social Inclusion, after September 11th, with a baby in a bouncy seat, our explicit mission was to end it. That's what we said before others were talking about structural racism. But 9/11 was the perfect example of what structural racism is, which is when $21 billion was coming into New York City to help us recover from the crisis, Chinatown and the Lower East Side were cut out of the catchment area. That's what I call structural racism. So a big part of being mayor and a big part of what is in all of my plans, which are at MayaWileyForMayor.com, is about how we reverse that and actually invest in communities of color so that communities of color are getting what they need, but also have a voice at the table. So one of the ways I worked with the School Diversity Advisory Group, for instance, on integrating our public schools, we had all the stakeholders at the table. It was a diverse group that included parents and students, advocates, academics, educators. And we went into every single borough, met with 800 different people to discuss what it would mean to have an excellent and integrated education. And the way I will work as mayor is as someone who listens and learns and leads in partnership by pulling those tables together. But at the end of the day, it's about using the power of the office to actually invest in communities that have been disinvested in.
Okay, thank you. I'm now going to go over to Mr. Chang.
Leader of a city that has a budget which is bigger than all but four states and a workforce that would be the 13th largest corporation in the country if it were a private corporation has immense power. And one of those powers is to convene a conversation among all the different parties and bring people together working from the bottom up. We have a unique opportunity right now because of the sort of the historical context of the Asian community. Asian immigration was illegal until 1965. So Asian immigration has really been late to the game. And adding to that complexity is the fact that there are people from so many different countries and so many different languages. So only now are people beginning to cohere. So we have so much to learn from the experience of the Black community with the civil rights and Black Lives Matter, from the Latinx community, and then also from the Jewish community fighting anti-Semitism. So we can leverage that knowledge, but we all recognize that it's not enough, that what we have done so far isn't working, and we need to take it to the next level, and we can all do that together. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And now to Ms. Morales, what role will you play as mayor in building solidarity between Asian American communities and other marginalized groups to dismantle systemic racism?
Sure. You know, I think first of all, we've got to recognize actually the rich history of the Asian American community in solidarity with other BIPOC communities and marginalized groups. You know, the API community is also incredibly diverse, and Black and Brown Asians exist. I think it's important for us to recognize how white supremacy has often created a wedge between the API community and the Black and Brown communities in pitting one another against each other. The model minority myth actually harms all of the diverse API communities because it actually furthers that wedge. We need to actually build a diverse multiracial coalition that works towards solidarity across all of our marginalized groups. I've done this already on my campaign leadership team that is women of color led with strong API representation. We need to approach public policy with a lens that is focused on dismantling systemic racism. And that includes things like desegregating our schools and defunding the police. Actually, and critically, we need to make sure that our marginalized communities do not continue to allow themselves to be pitted against each other in fighting for scraps, whether in the city budget or other critical city resources. And we can build that solidarity together when we provide the resources that our communities need.
Okay, let's move on. We have one more 1 minute question for each of you. Same topic, I should say. Asian Americans have been 2 times more likely to test positive for COVID-19 than their white counterparts, yet less likely to be tested at all. Asian American communities have taken a huge hit during this pandemic. The joblessness rate is 25.6%. That is the largest increase of any major racial group in New York City. A lot of members of our community tend to go to the community-based organizations first for help, but they have been historically underfunded by the city. We touched upon this earlier. I want to dive a little deeper now, and I'll start with Ms. Wiley. Given competing city budget priorities, how will you ensure equitable funding to sustain these organizations to address the needs of our Asian American community?
Yeah, look, a big part of it is by using a lens where we're actually looking at the dollars in need and being very explicit that the dollars have to go and feed and seed the ground in communities that have been hit hardest by COVID. And on the city side, in terms of, for example, human service procurement and contracting, a big part of that is to change how we're doing it. Creating the table with all the groups that are underrepresented in city contracting for human services and actually saying how we flip that script. A big part of it is that the dollars typically go to the biggest players who typically aren't the community-based human service providers. That's a problem for language access as well as the kind of culturally responsive care and support and the relationships and trust. So what I'm going to actually do is make that a mandatory agenda for the Mayor's Office of Contract Services, which is the office that figures that out, and really commit the money, including to the administrative costs required, to make sure we are investing fairly and justly to reach all our people. As I said in the beginning on the values, and also in terms of the way we look at comeback, we don't come back as a city that we love unless every single one of us comes back. And that includes the Asian and Pacific Islander community.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's move on to Mr. Chang. How will you make sure these community-based organizations are fairly funded to help the Asian American communities?
So the data you provided was true before COVID. Right, and the unemployment rate has actually increased further. We also know that the poverty rate in our community is the highest of any ethnic group in New York City. We know that we make the lowest weekly wages. We know that the loss of unemployment during COVID was the worst of any community. So we know all this data, but yet the data isn't being used. So what I would do as mayor is to actually create a system where we look at all the data. We look at because this applies to every single group. What data do we have? How does it align? How does our funding actually align to that data? And we can actually start seeing, are we being fair? Are we being equitable? Are we having equality in how the city begins to distribute its money? Because then I can make decisions instead of on emotion. I can make decisions based upon what the reality is on the ground and ensure that the right groups are being funded.
Okay, and now to Mr. McGuire, I'll have you weigh in on this topic.
Yeah, one of the threshold things, one of the first things that we need is somebody who understands how to manage budgets. Those who've been in office up to this point didn't have any familiarity with, no experience with, no judgment. And if we continue with the same thing, the impact that it has on this community is going to be that much worse. We've seen the conditions that exist pre-COVID. They've gotten exacerbated by COVID. Unless we have somebody who comes in who understands how to manage budgets and how to prioritize and how to build so that the Asian American community will be included, we're going to meet with the same statistics, if not worse. My plan is the greatest, most inclusive economic comeback plan in the history of this city, which by design in my budget will include this community, especially the small businesses that are the heart of this community, and making sure that we get the resources there that is included in my greatest, most inclusive economic comeback plan at rayformayor.com. I've done this before. I know how to lead and manage budgets more than anybody else in this entire race. I know how to do that and be held accountable for that budget, which is what I would do as I move this budget forward and as I lead this city forward to be inclusive.
Thank you, Mr. McGuire. Now to Ms. Morales, how will you address the economic and financial needs of these organizations?
Sure. So I'm actually the only candidate in this race that has spent decades at the helm of these kinds of organizations where you get reimbursed 80 cents on the dollar. And I have a history and a track record, not only of closing that gap, but of also effectively growing the organization and providing quality services. The reality of it is that our API community-based organizations receive less than 1% of all city contract dollars, despite the fact that the API community represents over 15% of our population. That is highly problematic. Community-based organizations are a critical part of my platform. I believe that they have trust in the communities. They speak the languages of our communities and are reflective of the communities that they serve. And they know how to approach from a culturally competent perspective. They know how to approach care and service provision in these communities. So I am committed to actually investing in CBOs to help actually move us forward from these multiple pandemics and reimbursing them at cost for actual costs incurred, rather than asking them to meet some superficial goals while not reimbursing them fully. The contracting, as Maya referenced, the contracting and funding process has got to be fundamentally overhauled. It should be much more flexible, and the organizations that are on the ground serving our community should be leading and informing that process moving forward.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Morales. We're now going to move into our next portion of the forum. And in this portion, I will direct a question to each candidate. They'll have 2 minutes to respond, and then thereafter, each other candidate will have 1 minute to respond. So let me begin with Ms. Morales. 70% of Asian Americans in New York City are foreign born. Asian Americans have the highest rate of linguistic isolation of any group in the city. That figure is at 42%. It's a whopping number, meaning that no one over the age of 14 in the household speaks English well or at all. So a lot of the members of our community, they seek language classes, access to language services. So how will you ensure high quality language access services to our communities, particularly for languages that fall outside of the top 10 languages spoken within the city? Ms. Morales?
Sure. I have committed as part of my first 100 days plan to roll out an equity core that will, in language and culturally appropriate ways, do a comprehensive assessment citywide of the impact of COVID on our communities and begin to roll out city services that are accessible in every language. This should actually be a standard, not an afterthought. If we have communities that speak the language, we have people that can serve as effective translators to help provide access to information and resources that our communities need. Translation should not be done by Google, but by the people that deeply understand the nuances of our communities. So I think it's really important for us to make a commitment that we are going to connect our city services to culturally and linguistically competent interpreters and translators. This is also, it's also a huge workforce opportunity. I am committing to actually hiring people from the community to provide these services in the community. This is something that is critical. It is something that should be non-negotiable, and it is something that I have committed to.
Okay, thank you very much. Now let's open up to Mr. McGuire, your thoughts.
You know, I was recently in Elmhurst, Queens, and I talked to a lot of the business owners, or the small business owners, and a lot of the civic leaders. And one of the things that we talked about that was missing there were community centers. And so as we think about how do we engage with the community, one of the ways that we do that, which is a relatively straightforward way, is to invest in our community centers. And one of the things that was highlighted was there.
I think we're having a little bit of technical difficulties. Mr. McGuire? Mr. McGuire, can you hear us? Mr. McGuire? Okay, let me move on to Mr. Chang for him to weigh in on that. And then if we get Mr. McGuire back, we'll go back to him. Mr. Chang?
I want to build on something that Diane said. It's a super important point, which is that we need to be able to give people, address people in the language that they are accustomed to. But we also need to address them in the medium that they're accustomed to, right? We're at a time where we don't have universal broadband across the city. And we also don't know whether many of these families actually have the knowledge and the devices needed to connect to valuable internet that would allow them to connect to government services. So we have to think about doing this in a way that also that does two things. Number one, we need to figure out who each of these families are and be able to understand what their language requirements are and what the best mode of delivery is, whether it's by internet or by paper. The second thing we need to do is to be able to have a workforce in our city that is representative of the people who we support, which includes people who are native language speakers, who can interface directly with the communities in the language that they want to speak.
Thank you very much. And finally, Ms. Wiley, I'll have you weigh in here on this topic.
Thank you. I actually want to pick up on something that Ray McGuire said. Now, I already talked about investing in community-based organizations as being critically important resources for folks in the AAPI community and all communities of color that also actually provide important linkages to other opportunities. But I'm actually creating community care centers in my plan for a universal care economy, which is also going to create jobs, good union jobs for care and in communities hard hit by COVID to begin with, for dropping off for child care, but also elder care and grandparent care, because we're often not just taking care of children in our families. But in those centers, we are going to co-locate with other community-based organizations and partners and government services. So that creates a one-stop shop center where we can have that translation. But in addition, and just very quickly, the community school model, which is community-based organizations in partnership with schools with wraparound services, that will help as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's move on to the next question. And Ms. Wiley, this is directed at you. It's about small businesses and workers' rights. So small businesses are a key mechanism for economic mobility in Asian American communities in particular, and one of the few paths out of poverty. Now, those who work at small businesses make up a large portion of the service and the workforce that keeps the heart of the city running. Small business owners and workers are often, however, pitted against one another. For instance, the city imposes immigrants, businesses with high fees, fines, cutting into those profit margins. And as a result, sometimes workers, particularly those who are without immigration status or who are underemployed, they're dealing with inadequate health and safety precautions, for instance. So, Ms. Wiley, how do you promote small business revitalization post-pandemic while also supporting immigrant rights?
By recognizing that we can walk and chew gum, and we have to do both these things in the city. So first, in terms of small businesses, which, by the way, are 50% of our jobs in this city. So we don't recover if our small businesses don't. But I've got a plan to spend $30 million to take care of the back debt that our small businesses in communities of color and hard-hit communities are suffering from because they were shuttered during COVID, so that they have a fresh slate. But we're also going to create a fee and fine holiday and restructure the relationship with all of the regulatory agencies of the city so that we're no longer strangling our small businesses with these kinds of regulations and creating more and clearer path to correcting problems if they have them. But we will enforce labor rights and the rights of our workers. And I will put more resources into the offices and consumer affairs and make sure we don't have wage theft, make sure that we don't have violation of any other laws that we are responsible for protecting. As a civil rights lawyer, that's critically important to me. And we're going to make sure that we're investing in the public education so that workers know exactly where they can go and how to come safely in order to ensure that they can make clear that their rights have been violated in the first place. That's important. And I'm proud to have been in City Hall pushing through the first sanctuary city legislation this city ever passed. So I'm going to make sure that there is no collaboration with ICE and making it clear that we are, in fact, a sanctuary city and we won't tolerate ICE near any of our folks or any of our buildings so that it's clear folks are safe and coming to complain to city government.
Okay, thank you so much. And I see we have Mr. McGuire back. Thank you for rejoining us. So I'm going to bring you into this discussion. Obviously, you have a business background. You were an executive at a large company. How would you take that experience and apply it to these small businesses that are the heart and soul of our community and help these small businesses revitalize while also supporting their immigrant workers?
So they are completely aligned with my plan, which you can see at rayfromair.com. It is core to the economic comeback in this city. It's called the greatest, most inclusive economic comeback plan in the history of the city. Go big, go small, go for it. Go small. 50,000, and in specific, I'm going to be specific here, 50,000 jobs in small businesses where we, number one, we take care of half of their wages for 1 year. Number two, we allow them to keep their New York City sales tax receipts for 1 year. Number three, we make certain that any of the fees that they have to pay, those fees get waived. Number three, I'm going to have a deputy mayor for small. Number four, a deputy mayor for small businesses to make sure that small businesses recognize that we want them here, that we want them here, and that they're essential to this economy. Number five, I'm going to make certain that where they have FICO or credit scores that get compromised, that I'm going to have a holiday on those credit scores beginning in January of 2020. And number six, I'm going to invest in the community, the CDFIs, the community banks, what I call my comeback banks, the BIDs and the Chambers of Commerce, to invest and give capital to those small businesses in the form of grants and equity, and for the new businesses in the form of low interest loans. And I will also make sure that we cut the red tape, which is the heavy bureaucracy. And because many of our restaurants have received 45 fines from seven different agencies, at least make certain that when those restaurants come in, that we reduce, if not completely eliminate, those fines. I want to make sure that I'm going to have a concierge service so the small businesses recognize that they can do business here, that they're welcome here. We're going to make the capital available, and we're going to make mentorship available.
Okay, we're out of time, but thank you for that detailed list. Let's move on now to Ms. Morales.
Thanks, Shirley. So I have committed to actually prioritizing small and mid-sized businesses in a new economy for New York City. We need to push for citywide rent relief, including commercial leases for our small businesses. We really need to fight to make sure that they receive the assistance that they, the financial assistance that they need to stay open, including permanent commercial rent stabilization, making sure that our small business owners are able to stay in their neighborhoods and in their communities, and strengthening the resources and capacities of the small business services, and including in, again, linguistically appropriate ways, and establishing a public bank for the city so that we can provide reasonable and fair loans to our small businesses. Insofar as the immigrant population is concerned and the undocumented workers, we need to make sure that we're establishing more city funds to put cash in the hands of those who need it the most. I have stood with the excluded workers. I have stood with the street vendors. And we need to make sure that we're protecting those communities without the constraints that are currently tied to federal funds. That includes targeting COVID recovery efforts in those communities as well, and really ensuring that New York City is a true sanctuary city that meets the basic needs of our immigrant communities, whether they're documented or not, and putting a hard stop to any collaboration between ICE and the city agencies.
Okay, thank you so much for weighing in. And finally, Mr. Chang, if you can talk about this topic.
Well, clearly the answer is to grow the pie. That if small businesses are doing better, and then they're going to be better able to afford to pay a living wage to their workers, whether they're documented or not. And we know that actually Black and Brown businesses before COVID were struggling. And with the economic crisis, we know that they were disproportionately hit, and they closed in disproportionate rates. And disproportionately low numbers of them were able to access PPP and other things. And disproportionate numbers of them were able to use the technology to be able to come back and do things like this delivery services. For Asian businesses, I mean, so just look at Chinatown. Chinatown's retail revenue declined by 98% after COVID. and then it still has not jumped back to the level in the rest of the city. So we need to figure out how to do this. I'm calling for an urban innovation core to be able to assist these entrepreneurs with coming into the next generation, using the tools available to be able to grow that pie and to be able to make a living for themselves, their families, and for their workers.
Okay, thank you all candidates very much. Let's move on to the next topic, and that is public education. 95% of all New York City public schools serve Asian American students. You're looking at a proud graduate of the New York City public school system. Let's talk a little bit about this. And I want to begin here with Mr. Chang. How would you engage marginalized Asian American communities on your education policy decisions?
Well, clearly we have a completely divided education system that is divided between the haves and the have-nots. Asians are clearly a big point here, but it's every single community across the city. And this gets put into a very false focus around the Shazat. The Shazat is a test which is only an indicator for the gross racial disparities of and the underperformance of the overall city system. If the city system could deliver quality education to every student, it would take pressure off of the Shazat. If advanced students were able to do things like take Harvard courses on edX or Coursera and be able to get high school credit for it, to be able to go seamlessly into CUNY or NYU or the other institutions in this city and get high school credit for it, it would take a lot of the pressure off of the specialized high schools. And it would also create a beacon of hope for students who are of all students to know that this single test is not going to dictate their future. There are other things that are very important to do. Like, we know that there were 60,000 jobs created during COVID in technology. Yet what do we do in ways of educating people? Right? We need to start by thinking about having algorithmic education through things like Excel, of having grammar, because that is actually the structure of programming languages, to be able to work in teams to build things, to be able to think about how you actually use those tools. So even if you're not going to be a programmer, that you're conversant in technology, because that is really the access to the future. I've created a technology apprenticeship program at CUNY. We did bring high school students into it. We know that this can be done, that there's a huge demand, and we have the talent right here in the city who are not being given the opportunities to succeed.
Okay, thank you very much. And Ms. Wiley, what about your vision when it comes to your education policy decisions and engaging these Asian American communities?
You know, just like we did with the School Diversity Advisory Group, where we really went into every borough and made sure that we were going to schools when we went into the boroughs to have the exchanges by being open to the public and having folks come in. And we did provide translation services at every single table rather than doing a traditional town hall, which usually doesn't work very well, having tables for parents to talk and students to talk together where we had note takers and translators at each table. But I think this is something government must do. And I've already committed to creating a commission that will actually work in each community, particularly focused on underserved and marginalized communities, to have just that kind of process to come back with recommendations about how best to engage. Because one of the complaints that I've heard loud and clear and agree with about mayoral control is that it does not have enough voice for enough of our residents, and I'll change that.
Thank you so much. And Mr. McGuire, same topic, same question, a minute to answer in terms of public education impacting the Asian American community. How would you engage marginalized communities on your education policy decisions? You are muted.
I've said from the outset in my opening comments that which would define my leadership of this city and at its core is education. I got here through education. I would not be where I am without education. So there's no higher priority. And what we need to do is we need to start earlier than what we're doing. We need to transform the system from what it is now, a random pre-K through 12, and be a lot more intentional. My plan is outlined in detail in my cradle to career plan, where I'm going to start before pre-K, because many of our children get to pre-K, they're already behind in some instances because of language capabilities. So we need to start earlier and make certain we have the language capabilities there. And then we make the need as a milestone, make certain by the end of the third grade, every child in New York City can read and do math in anticipation of the future and making certain that that foundation is strong. No child gets out of the third grade without being able to do math and read. And then the rest of the plan is outlined in my rayformair.com educational plan. This is the highest priority that exists in this city. It is my highest priority because that's how I got here.
Okay. Thank you so much for weighing in. And now, Ms. Morales, if you can talk a little bit about public education and your potential policies for the Asian American community when it comes to education.
Sure. I'll start off by saying I am a proud graduate of the public school system. My children both graduated from the public school system, and I'm the only candidate in this race who was actually taught in the public school system. And we are the most segregated school system in the country. We also know that nearly 20% of our Asian students are English language learners, and that our English language learners have the highest rate of dropouts from the New York City public schools at over 26%. So the first thing that I would do in the first 100 days is to execute an educational equity executive order to finally begin to desegregate our schools, eliminate the disparities, and hold agencies accountable for the inequitable educational outcomes in our city. And that means bringing the community to the table in that process, including and especially our students, so that they can have a voice in the process, and making sure that we are centering the communities that has been disproportionately harmed the most first.
Thank you so much. Let's move on to the next topic. And it's also another super important one, and that is public health. Members of the Asian American community often struggle with accessing physical and mental health services due to being uninsured or underinsured, difficulty navigating the healthcare system, fear of these different healthcare systems. There could even be a lack of language, and they're afraid of going to a doctor that doesn't speak their language. So there's a lot going on here when in terms of the Asian American community. There's also, though, a huge lack of mental health services. And this community in particular faces a stigma when it comes to accessing mental health services. So let's dive into this. And I'm going to begin with Mr. McGuire. How will you address the continued lack of healthcare access for Asian Americans, in particular, those who are undocumented and uninsured in our city?
You know, we have done an inadequate job at making certain that healthcare and mental health care facilities are available. Many of us live in healthcare deserts. It gets down to how we're going to prioritize in our budget, again, which is where I have unique capacity to do that, where I have invested in both mental health care and in overall health care into the different boroughs. And we need to make sure that that continues to happen, that we eliminate these healthcare deserts and bring primary health care into our communities. And one of the ways that I've identified doctors to me is to have multiple units that go into our boroughs that have language capabilities. That's number one. So we take primary care into the boroughs. Number two, we certainly have enough vacant spaces now where we can provide for mental health care in a safe, linguistically open and capable way to make certain and culturally aware for those people who are suffering from the challenges of mental illness, many of which have been exacerbated by COVID, that there's a safe place to go, where the community recognizes that there's a safe place to go, where you can maintain your dignity, where you can get the services, where you feel comfortable and safe, both from a mental health care standpoint and from a primary care health point. Let's put primary care into the communities, and let's do it without stigmatizing any members of the communities. And let's make sure that we have the dollars available to do just that, which is how I would allocate the dollars, and make certain that those who are not documented get the same care. There's a lot of assistance that come from the federal government focused on this in the city. We should have this as a high priority, especially given the dynamics of COVID and the impact of COVID on our primary care health and our primary health care, as well as on our mental health care. Let's prioritize this. We have the resources. We need to have somebody who understands how to allocate those resources and do it in a way that each of us has a dignity and gets the care that's necessary.
Thank you, sir. Now we'll have a minute for each of the other candidates to weigh in here. Let's begin with Ms. Wiley. Same question. How will you address the continued lack of healthcare access for Asian Americans, in particular, undocumented and uninsured populations in our city? Ms. Wiley?
Well, at first is by recognizing that the city doesn't get a dime from the federal government to help serve the undocumented. It's actually one of the biggest, most shameful truths of our country is that we ignore our residents if they don't have papers in our federal programs. So one of the things that I'm going to do is someone who's also done access to health care when I was a civil rights attorney at the NAACP Legal Defense Fund is actually look at exactly what we have the power to do in city government, which is to take the fact that we already insure over 1,250,000 people in this city. It's called our city workforce and their families. The reason I point to that is it gives us the leverage and ability to start negotiating, creating an expansion of that health insurance card so that we can create a citywide health insurance card for those who are undocumented because the federal government won't do it, at least not yet, but we won't wait. But the other thing is recognizing we have to save our community-based clinics and our safety net hospitals, which if we are really honest, are at deep risk of closing right now, even though they are often the first line of health services. So I'm gonna spend the $100 million that our clinics need to stay open and recognizing that particularly in boroughs like Queens, which had the highest rates of COVID, and the fewest hospital beds per patient, I'm gonna make sure that we're shoring up our safety net hospitals as well as our public hospitals. And I'm gonna make sure that we're doing that in ways that partner with community-based organizations for access.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Wiley. And now over to Mr. Chang. Public health, how will we increase healthcare access for Asian Americans?
Well, you weren't kidding. You weren't kidding when you talked about the bias against mental health issues and health care among the Asian community. You know, after surviving racism and domestic violence, I really desperately needed mental health. And when I told my mother I was getting it, she criticized me because it was an insult to her upbringing of me. And I think we need to overcome biases like that and have somebody who really understands what that is like. Because we can do it. We may not be able to reach every single person who needs it, but certainly in the second generation of people, we can certainly reach the folks, especially teenagers who've been so adversely affected over this. And then we go back to that same question about language and culturally appropriate education, that we need to be able to do that in a way that, again, meets the requirements and meets the needs of every single part of our community so they can understand the reasons why and get access to it.
Okay. And finally, Ms. Morales, I'll let you weigh in here on this topic.
Yes, thank you for that. So I think one of the first things we need to do is to advocate for and support the New York State Health Act and ensure that we are including all New Yorkers, documented or not. As I referenced earlier, I also have called for in the first 100 days, the implementation of a COVID-19 equity and data response unit that would actually take responsibility for reviewing, assessing, and addressing what we know are the ongoing disparities throughout the city, specifically in regard to things like race and gender and language access. That team would distinguish specifically among Asian groups because we know that the Asian community is not a monolith, and develop culturally relevant and accessible healthcare services and interventions to respond to the increasing disparities. We need to make a commitment to collecting this data and utilizing that data in a way that actually informs our practices and our responses. The other thing is I've talked about the need for us to establish integrated community health clinics that are located in the community, that are accessible linguistically and culturally competent.
Okay, candidates, we are near the finish line, at least just for tonight. For this evening, we have one final question for each of you. You will each have 1 minute. And let's start with Mr. Chang. What do you take away from this forum? What is your message for Asian American New Yorkers?
My message is comes from what I've learned is from being an Asian American, which is that we have grit, we have determination, we have creativity, we have our families, and we have our cultures, that when we bring those things together, we can figure out how to prevail. The next mayor will have to be sensitive to that and provide the scaffolding and a foundation to build upon so that your children can have seize opportunities and be able to progress in society and to be able to support themselves economically. That's the American dream. That's why that's why Asians came here, to have access to those things. And we can do it. And what I invite everyone to do is, if you are seeing this, come to my website and book and the Zoom open office hours with me at my website, chang.nyc. I look forward to seeing all of you. Thank you so much.
And thank you. And Ms. Wiley, your turn.
Well, as I said, as someone who loves New York City because everyone is here, but also has worked for racial justice and equality my entire career, and as someone who is Black and knows what it feels like to be disinvested in, to not count or be seen as not counting, I'm running for mayor because I want to make sure every single New Yorker counts, and that includes every single New Yorker in the Asian and Pacific Islander community, because this is what makes us special. And I have a plan at mywifewileyformayor.com that includes being very explicit about investing in us so that this city stays diverse and that it stays one where we can all raise our children.
Okay, thank you so much. I'm going to move on now to Ms. Morales. Your final thoughts.
Sure, thank you. Listen, the last 14 months, the pandemic of COVID-19 has exposed and exacerbated inequities and injustices that existed for far too long, and that we as a city really haven't done enough to address. And we know that those disparities impact the Asian American Pacific Islander community, Black and Brown communities, disproportionately over our white counterparts. It is possible for us to build a city that is better than it has ever been. We have to have the courage, the moral and the political courage at this point in time, to put a stake in the ground and actually commit to not going back, to creating a new New York City that actually works for all of us. I am ready to lead because I believe that making sure every person has the chance for dignity and a good life is what government is supposed to do. And I have spent my entire career doing that, creating access, creating opportunity for communities just like the Abbey community. And I am ready to do that on a citywide scale as mayor of New York City.
And last but not least, Mr. McGuire, your closing thoughts.
Listen, on October the 15th, of last year, I called my then 94, now 95-year-old mother and told her I quit my job. She thought I'd lost my mind. I said, Mama, listen, this city is in a place and time where we're broke, broken, and divided. And given the sacrifices that you've made, I'm not a politician. I don't owe anybody any favors, but I do have what it takes to go and lead this city. And what I've heard from New Yorkers is that they want something different. All the others had their chance, and we've gone backwards. And as we think about what is going forward, in order for New York City, in order for us to have our best days going forward, we need somebody in whom the city can trust, who's got a track record, and whom they can believe. Our communities have been left out for far too long. I've not served in any administration. I have not gotten termed out. I'm not looking for a promotion. I'm looking to do what's in the best interest of New York City, in this community, which I've had a long-standing and deep relationships. Far too long, it's been excluded. Under my leadership, what will happen is that we'll be included, and to see how you're going to be included and how this community gets included in the greatest, most inclusive economic comeback in the history of this city, it's rayformayor.com. I have stood with, stood for, and stood alongside this community for the entirety of my being, 4 decades in New York City, and I'll continue to do that. It's not something I've talked about. It's something I've been about, and I got receipts.
All right. And that wraps up our panel discussion for the evening. I want to thank all of our candidates for participating, particularly during a pandemic. Thank you all so much for being here. And a couple of reminders, CACF will have this entire discussion forum on their website, as well as all of our Pix11 social media platforms. We will have that as well if you want to watch this again. Thank you to CACF, as well as all the participating organizations, the 36 or so community-based organizations that put this evening together. And a couple of reminders here. Next month, already, New Yorkers will be heading to the polls to do our civic duty and to start the process of electing our next mayor. And these are all important discussions, important topics, I should say, issues we've discussed here tonight, important to the Asian American community and also New York City as a whole. A couple of dates. Remember to vote on June 22nd for the primary and a primary election, I should say, and early voting starts on June 12th. Continue to stay with PIX 11 from here through Election Day. We will bring you the very latest on all of our candidates and issues that matter to the city of New York. Have a great night, everyone. Good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.